Hello, and welcome to the Veeam Community Podcast. I am your host, Rick Vanover. This is Episode 5, Saving Time with Virtualization. Here we go. Today, our guests are Stan Brinkerhoff and Doug Carson. How you doing, guys?
I'm great, thanks.
Great, Rick. How are you doing today?
Hey, I'm great for a Monday. This is a Monday, and I had a busy weekend. I'm just ready to get back into it. Thank goodness. Thank goodness for Monday. I don't think people say that frequently, but I just need to get caught up and get moving with things. So,
Sure. I'm not sure where you are from, but we're up in Vermont here, and we had a gnarly snowstorm all weekend. So I was out, shoveling, ice with like a pickaxe and just really back to basics. No technology there that can save you from the ice on the roof.
Now, Doug, you are in. Help me out. Where are you, Doug?
I'm in Glasgow, in Scotland.
Gotcha. Your Skype profile threw me off because it's East Kilbride, and then I'm like, well, the UK is what Skype says, but. Yes. What's the whole difference between Scotland and Britain and England and the UK? And I can never get it straight.
It's the United Kingdom consists of several countries: England, Scotland, Northern Ireland, and Wales. So we're in Scotland right now. But I like to keep you guessing. I've got a picture of the Sydney Opera House in the UK. So I've got to keep you guessing where I'm from.
Yeah, that is weird. I didn't catch that. That is the Sydney Harbour there on your Skype picture. And Stan's Skype picture is appropriate with a ski mask and a beanie cap on, I think.
So. Just to keep it even more geeky, I managed to take that picture on a webcam on top of Sydney Harbour Bridge. So it's just to keep it kind of
nice.
Keep that going.
That's cool, guys. Well, hey, thanks for being on the show. We're just going to talk about virtualization. It's all about saving time nowadays. And in my own personal practice, it's so easy to provision a server, so easy to, I work for Veeam, so we can make it easy to back up a server as well. But what kind of time savings do you guys see or use in your own virtualization practice? Around just making your day more efficient as far as the operational tactics of your environments. What kind of stuff do you have going on?
I'll give a crack at that, I guess. Pretty much. I mean, things like having the templates and being able to deploy off templates. The fact that if you're willing to go to the expense of things like Enterprise Plus and deploy host profiles and network distributed vSwitches and stuff like that, then just being able to plug a host in, configure it, check it against the profiles, and off you go. I mean, with ESXi now, you can install it within 15-20 minutes. You've got another ESX host in there. I mean, it's just phenomenal, the difference between what the physical environment used to be like and now. To be honest, the thought of even deploying a physical server fills me with dread, because it's just to think that you can take half a day to do a physical server and 15 minutes to do an ESXi host and deploy, within 15 minutes VMs, it's just far better. And I personally find myself, with things like that, is to try and make myself life even easier, with things like Power CLI and stuff like that, and really try and integrate these things to try to do a bit of cost savings. But I don't know about yourself, Stan. Have you benefits you've seen from these kind of things as well?
Virtualization's made a huge difference, I think, in every part and every aspect of kind of what we do in IT. In Vermont here, we've got a bunch of smaller businesses. It's not a kind of the big businesses aren't here as much. So in my world, we deal with a lot of these businesses that have got, one, two, three, four is kind of a good number of physical servers, or even logical servers. Edit? Did I just break this?
No, you were going fine.
Okay, sorry. I shouldn't play with things.
That's no problem. Okay. So yeah, just start off with here in Vermont.
Okay. Yeah, so here in Vermont, we've got a huge group of just small startup businesses that do tons of great things. It's a really great environment for that. But what kind of comes with that is walk into a business, they've just got one server or two servers, and what virtualization has really kind of brought us here is just a huge, huge impact on backup and recoverability and, you know, being able to test your backup. I know there's some products out there, that can just do instant checks of these backup files. So you walk into a place, you know, before these snowstorms, you know, in Vermont, we lose power every now and then. We lose, you know, our connectivity back to the internet. But you can have a good test of your backup on a Friday before you go home, which is just huge. Back in the days with tape, you know, your backup window is 8 hours. After that 8 hours, you've got to recover to a host to test it. It was such a huge time sink that no one ever did it. And it's huge to know that you've got a good backup, and it's a huge time saver.
Oh, Stan, you're doing me a favor. I try to sneak in my cheap plug for Veeam on every podcast, so you set me up great. I saw a tweet of yours, and I'm just going to quote your tweet here. Using Veeam sure. Instant Recovery, once again, saved myself 3 hours of work. This purchase is about to pay for itself and save time. And that was actually kind of the theme for the podcast, is saving time. But, so you use Instant Recovery to do things like that and save time. So that's another way you can kind of take a functionality and just use it for your, you know, larger time management and your virtualization environment practice. I think that's pretty cool that you were using it like that.
Yeah, I'm not sure, you know, who you over there wrote that little NFS server that's built into to Veeam Backup and Recovery, but what a cool addition to the product. You know, when someone comes to you and they're like, hey, I need this one file back, or I need, you know, part of an SQL server recovered. You know, we used to do just that one piece, and you've got then an investment in time that's been committed. And if you miss a piece of it, or you don't go wide enough with your backups, you know, you've got to start all over again. And you know, the ability just to recover instantly, not even, you know, it's almost faster than instant. You can bring up, you know.
Oh, come on, man! You're being too nice.
No, it's like you right click on your domain controller and your Exchange server, and you know, 15 seconds later, it's booting up. It's intense. It's like, how is that possible?
Well, you know, it's officially magic. Is what we have going on.
No, I believe it, and it's you know, one of those little things you run into in IT that it's like. You know, it makes sense. I get that I have backups. I get that you can make a custom NFS server. I get that VMware can talk to that, and I understand all that. But it's like when it's there in the moment, and it's just saved you, you know, globs of time. It's a wonderful thing.
But I think virtualization, just as a platform, has done so many other things. You know, what Doug mentioned, templates and deploying a server, and like the last thing I'd want to do is wait, I don't know, 6 weeks for a shipment of a server or whatever that gives it just for an application. That scares the bejesus out of me.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if yourself, you mentioned about instant recovery and testing backups and stuff like that automatically. Have you guys seen yourselves that there's more and more pressure even on the small businesses to do these things, to be able to produce to auditors and things like that, the ability to they can show that they've tested these things and show that they've done these restores? I'm seeing that increasingly more with some of the business clients I talk to.
What we see a lot of is just, you know, systems testing during updates. What does it look like to run through an update? You know, let's script it out, let's walk through it, and the ability to kind of clone these live production servers into a, you know, segregated test environment. Again, you know, you can right click clone a VM and you know, SAN copies aside, it's pretty instant. Whereas you used to have to build one up from scratch or pull from a backup, and that's a huge time savings on our end.
Now, Stan, you mentioned, you know, test environments, which that brings up a good question. I got to give you the nod of working in the coolest industry of all podcast guests thus far. So tell me a little bit about what you do as much as you can and you're comfortable.
Yeah, Rick. So I work for an alternative energy company. We actually we design and we build wind turbines up here in Vermont. So we've got a couple different models that we produce, and then we distribute them kind of globally. So it's kind of a unique organization, both here in Vermont and both globally, to be involved in this.
Cool. So that probably is like I don't want to say an industry, or at least a function that kind of raises your test environment requirement compared to most small VMware environments. Is that a fair statement?
Oh, absolutely. You know, there's a huge dev test scenarios. There's also a lot of pure development that, that groups need. Test servers kind of today. They needed them 5 minutes ago. They need a build server. They need to check out this new software. So, you know, the, kind of moving towards the cloud someday.
Someday.
You know, the cloud means a lot of things to a lot of people, and we're a small organization. We don't have a huge instance of spare CPU time and disk space, but we do have a lot of users out there who need to build up these test systems, and we've got a bunch of spare servers that we do that with, and that's absolutely huge to be able to do that and to be able to build these environments quickly.
Sure, sure. You say you don't have a lot of spare CPU cycles, which makes me think you might have a collection of busy applications, even though it's a relatively small environment. Is that the case, or is it a broad mix of applications?
Oh, it's a broad mix. I think our bigger issue is more of a memory management issue.
Really?
It seems like everything wants globs of memory these days, and we toss 64 and 96 gigs of memory in each blade, but still it seems like it runs out pretty quick.
Oh, you're one of the blade folk.
blades are wonderful things. The reason that I think we go with them is that they're energy efficient. They use less power than a traditional server, especially with kind of being able to scale up and scale down power supplies and some of the energy management features that are built into them.
That brings up a good point, because you mentioned, let's just say 5 host maximum. Do you find yourself just barely getting into the break-even point on blades? Because I've always thought you needed like 4 or 5 blades to break even.
That's an interesting question. I haven't done the actual math on it. they were here when I rolled in one day, and we've just kind of gone with them since.
Well, there's a strategy that people have kind of told me over the years, and that's make a decision like you're IBM or you're a billion-dollar corporation or something like that. And so from a compute unit, the blade server chassis is the way to go. If I had to be ultra-dense, ultra-big, and I needed a bunch of hosts in a rack or that type of thing, I would probably go blade. But too many times I've not had space issues. I've not really had power issues, even though I've not really thought too frequently about power savings for blades, but that brings up a good scenario to work out. But the other kind of one silver lining to blades is that you can have 3 or 4 blades that are ESXi hosts, and then one blade that's your mail server that you intentionally don't virtualize or something like that. Do you do any of that on your blades?
One of the biggest reasons I think we go with blades is a TCO kind of concept with them. You set the chassis up one time. We have both Dell and HP chassis in house here, and you do that. You invest that time to set them up one time. You wire them up. You cable them up, and then any new blade you stick in there, it's down to a real quick setup. You image VMware onto that sucker. You bring it up, and there's no cabling. There's no installation, and we absolutely do run a myriad of loads on those blades. Some are ESX, some are dedicated data utility servers for different purposes.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
Have you found yourself with you're talking about obviously TCO and things like that, going down looking at things like Vue and stuff like that in those kind of areas, virtual desktops?
So virtual desktops are are a wonderful thing. I think they capitalize on the kind of where we got here with server virtualization, and that you bring spare resources. You have people running Office all day long, so they're not using half of these modern CPUs. Unfortunately, in a research and development organization, you have quite the opposite. We've got people who do tax their systems all day long, and they do need high-end 3D video cards to draw models or to do simulations. So I would love to have a bigger cluster, more storage, fancy toys. But like VMware Vue, I just don't think would work very well in an environment where it's so bound to the CPU.
Do you have a lot of users that are severed from the wire, like mobile engineers or something like that?
Oh, we definitely have. Being in an R&D environment where you're moving around mm-hmm. to different sites and building these turbines, we definitely have people who run around you know, with laptops. I would guess a good 80% of our fleet is laptop at this point.
So Vermont is one of the states I haven't been to. I've been to almost every state, but especially in the east half of the country, Vermont's the only state I haven't been to. And, you know, when you're talking about severed from the network users, the next best option is like a mobile broadband solution. So, you know, is 3G widely available throughout Vermont? I'd almost foresee that an issue, or is it not an issue?
Oh, it absolutely is an issue. You know, Vermont's a beautiful place, and we definitely love our environment and our, you know, open mountains. So there's actually been a hesitancy to put up new towers. And, you know, as a result, I think Vermont was one of the last states that got the iPhone. It's one of the last states that's gotten 3G service. Mm-hmm. You know, so it wasn't too long ago that, you know, if you didn't live somewhere around a city and you couldn't get cable or DSL, that you were stuck on dial-up or satellite. You know, a working from home scenario just wasn't possible.
Because of that situation with the bandwidth, then that definitely means your users are probably best equipped with local compute.
You know, it definitely varies. You know, when we're going to different sites, I'm not sure where you normally, if you've ever driven by and seen a wind turbine, but they're definitely not in downtown Boston or downtown New York where you've got, you know, good infrastructure.
Not the case. One in Columbus, Ohio just popped up on the Circle Highway right across the street from where I used to work. And it's like in the parking lot of a car dealership. It's actually quite entertaining. The people I used to work with are a little bit entertained by it, but so I know of one. Let me just say that
we're kind of similar. We've got quite a big green kind of initiative here, and there's a lot of wind turbines. And even if you look out the back of, you know, my old house, you could see one, a farm sitting on top of the hill and stuff like that. So we're certainly. They're pretty close sometimes.
What do they need to be connected? Just they need to somehow get on the grid, right? And I guess there's monitoring solutions, so there's some sort of network, right? I don't know.
You know, if it takes more than, you know, 12 volts on the line, it's a little over my head.
There you go. Yeah, if it's not AA batteries, I don't know what to do.
It's a little more involving than PoE.
Yeah, you're right.
There's a big box and a, you know, and a spinny meter of some kind, I'm sure.
Yeah, and they're heavy and expensive. That's all we know.
Yeah,
it doesn't have a V in front of it, so it's not worth looking at.
So Doug, tell me a little bit about yourself and what you do there in Scotland.
Well, currently I'm a systems consultant right now. So again, like Stan, I go into kind of smaller enterprises, it's multi-medium enterprises, and most of the time kind of looking at VMware solutions for that. So that's kind of pretty much most of my day job is dealing with the VMware side of these kind of things for these kind of small and medium-sized clients. So,
yeah, cool.
Some pretty interesting stuff. What I seem to be finding is quite a lot of these small and medium clients are, you know, they're very keen on using VMware. They're very open-minded about a lot of the technologies that are coming out and are out. And again, as I mentioned earlier, they're increasingly pushed for making sure that they can test backups, auditing of those tests and things like that, so, and disaster recovery. So the ability to have these virtual environments, and as Stan says, the ability to possibly stand up your VMs from a backup environment is so fundamental for these small to medium enterprises that, you know, they're starting to really kind of relish the benefits of virtualization and the things that brings you, I guess.
You brought up a question to make me think a little bit. You know, you work in that smaller environment as well, but you had mentioned VMware View in your question to Stan, you know, at least virtual desktop. Do you find a lot of virtual desktop adoption in the small environments?
There's a lot of talk about it. I think at the moment, a lot of the clients are kind of still trying to grapple with it and see where they are with it. I think a lot of the clients I speak to think initially it'll be as easy as server virtualization, but when they start to get into it a bit more and look at the storage costs and stuff like that, and they kind of trade off between those things. They realise there's a bit more work involved, but there's definitely a keen interest in it.
Sure.
But they can actually trying to you know, put that into production is just takes away a while longer when people have everyone's got their you know, ideas about it and things like that. So yeah, there's some good stuff coming out of it, and I think a lot of people are very keen on giving it a go.
My issue back in the day with VDI was I had always had trouble getting a consistent user pool that was a high number of users. You know, it didn't make sense for 12, 15, 20 users. You know, even if it was like 3,000, you know, okay, it kind of made some sense, but you almost needed a really large pool of users to make it work. And, I had one opportunity back in another position, but we had this hardline application that just put a hard stop on VDI. It just wouldn't go. Tried everything we could. And, you know, probably if we tried it again now, I was probably a little bit too ahead of the curve at the time, but I believe that solution would have been addressed by now. But, you know, and I think they do have something in place now with another product. But, yeah, it's just there's so many factors that depend, and that market is so many offerings coming up all the time. So, it really, when you're shopping, makes a big difference, I think, for VDI.
I think also as well, the thing that we have found in speaking to a number of clients is a lot of the clients, they don't really... they can't quantify the OPEX. A lot of them just have, you know, usage models where, you know, every man hour there's a certain amount of that goes to an IT budget. So when the IT guys are very keen on trying to get VDI in and they'll show the benefits of it, they struggle to try and, you know, put the cost together for the OPEX saving, because quite simply the business doesn't have a model that they really analyse OPEX, as maybe some of the bigger enterprises would do.
Sure.
So that's what I've seen that as well, is that a lot of the guys are fighting to try and see what savings they can get on CAPEX really before OPEX. And that's something that, again, is that the smaller kind of medium enterprises are kind of trying to see what savings in the CAPEX, because a lot of companies, they don't really look at OPEX in a lot of the sense, like a lot of the cases.
I think that's not limited to virtualization for desktops either. I think even server virtualization, yeah, that OPEX cost model gap is the same there as well.
That savings on the management side, maybe it doesn't make sense, or maybe it's not entirely clear why we're doing this.
Yeah, I don't know why I'm doing this. Why am I doing this?
Someone said it was a neat toy to play with.
Oh, yeah. I heard it goes great on resumes, right? No, I'm just teasing. No, I love virtualization, guys. I have a lot of passion for it, as do both of you. And that's actually a good segue to the next part of the podcast. It's my gimmick, if you will. I'm going to ask both of you these questions. We'll start with Stan. So Stan, the part of this podcast is called Three Views from You. I'm just going to ask you, as a technologist, you know, not necessarily related to virtualization or what you're doing now, in your past, Stan, what was kind of the most interesting thing you've ever done with technology or story you can share with us?
You know, so back in school, back when I was going to college, you know, we ran a Novell shop back in the day, and so I just remember, you know, being an intern with you know, the management group at school, at college, and you know, one day coming into the office and the up down monitor saying, you know, one of the file servers was missing. I can't remember what package we were using to monitor the network, and it wasn't like a typical up down kind of language. You know, system's down. It was a missing kind of error message. And it was phrased weird. But I think it was built into the software. Lo and behold, the server was physically missing. You know, someone had a student had broken into the basement and, you know, stolen the server over the night. You know, it was one of these big old Dells with, like, you know, caster wheels built into it. And then, you know, I think they rolled it away somehow. And it was just, you know, it was this great place to have servers. You know, it was the basement of the administration building. The boiler room was, you know, right next door to it. So it was like this great environment. It was, you know, 90 degrees, high humidity, and some of these servers that had been sitting down there actually had the basement would flood every now and then. So some of the servers actually had like 2 inches of rust at the bottom of the case.
Nice.
So, you know, it's just this wonderful experience of, you know, of walking into the business and discussing kind of where do the servers go, where do they live, what do we invest in infrastructure, and thinking back to the days when, you know, we found some space next to a boiler room.
Nice. Did they ever find the stolen server?
They did not.
Hmm.
They had backups, I guess.
Well, there we go. How about Doug, in your past, you know, what's kind of the most interesting technology story you can share with us?
Before I did IT, I used to work in electronics, especially in the mobile phone kind of area. So, but if you imagine the phones that you've got now and all the functionality they add, well, I used to work in essentially repairing the mobile phones. And I remember getting this phone that it was probably the size of half your keyboard. That's again the size of the phone. But I remember, and somebody saying to me, you know, you need to fix this phone. So I'm looking at this phone and I'm going, okay, fine. But how do you open it? And then my colleague bent down and brought up this almost like this vise, which I had to put the phone into. You put it in the vise, this big massive handle, crank it open, and it was all analog. There was no digital in this phone at all. So trying to troubleshoot that was just unbelievable.
Oh man, we needed a flip cam for something like that. You know, I'm so glad I'm equipped for this stuff now, because you know, back then the ridiculous stuff where there's no memories. So Doug, what's going on in your current right now, most interesting technology thing that kind of gets you, you know, what you're most passionate about right now?
Right now, it's I've been doing quite a bit with Site Recovery Manager, and that's some of the stuff I really, really like, the Site Recovery Manager and where it is and kind of where it's going. As at VMworld and Europe, and I went to that, and there's a lot of nice things coming out from that. But implementing Site Recovery Manager for a few clients has been really interesting, and you have to learn a lot about SAN replication and, you know, how you design your VMware infrastructure in terms of being able to put VMs in the relevant data stores to allow the failover and the replication and things like that. So,
cool. Hey, Stan, what's going on right now with you that you're most interested in technology wise?
You know, we're doing all kinds of things here, and I'm, you know, I would speak about kind of way our business works and how we really leverage VMware by building up big servers and shipping them out to just kind of have utility servers on site. But it actually, I think, speaks more to back to the beginning. We're talking about kind of the atmosphere and here in small businesses that, you know, so these smaller groups that occasionally work with, if you historically they bought, you know, $2,500, $3,000 servers. And what that gets you these days from a Dell or HP standpoint is just an immense amount of resources that when you put Windows Server on that, and just Windows Server, the hardware sits so idle, and you know, people think, well, you know, this is 4 cores, 6 cores, 8 cores, when our old server was doing this just fine with 1 core. And you segue so quickly into, you know, I hear this great thing about VMware or virtualization. It's cute and adorable that, you know, people still haven't actually embraced it internally, but then, you know, quickly after that, it becomes how do you manage that? How do you back that up? And then how do we really leverage that? And it's interesting how quickly you move from, you know, okay, we had this one old server that we overbought, and now we're running VMware on. We've got this scary new backup platform.
And scary? Then come on.
Well, it's not scary. It's you know, it's different.
I'm not cutting that out. This podcast is as is. to all of my bosses listening, I apologize. I don't screen these guests. It's the first time I've talked to the guy.
You know, so it is scary. It's different. But, you know, as the tool set changes, as you move from a host-based backup into something like Veeam's backup and recovery, just, you know, the tool set opens up a world of change that you can, you know, do easy replication. You can do, you know, these things that were really out of the hands of small businesses just a number of years ago. A single server, two server kind of replication for a small business was a huge investment that today they can get by with, you know, some low end equipment and, you know, these amazing tools from organizations like Veeam.
Yeah. Well, how about in the future? What are you most interested in technology wise? What do you see coming down the pike?
Oh, you know, it's so amazing just seeing what's coming out. I really hope that someone, be it VMware or Veeam or another organization, can bring a tool to us that allows us to maybe scale down the VDI or scale down the cloud. Some of these tools we saw at VMworld are amazing and beautiful and wonderful, but don't really make sense for a 200-400 person company.
Yeah, I'm with you. Too many times the small guys are left behind. How about you, Doug? What do you see in the future, kind of most interesting, most compelling technology-wise?
I'm not sure if it's a one technology, but the when I was at VMworld Europe, I went to a chat, and it was more about, you know, the future of cloud and stuff like that, and how the kind of possible ideas, and it was more kind of thoughts out in the open rather than anything else. But the thing that they described, and I've heard this a few times by various people, about how each component of the virtual machine will have its own metadata, its own kind of information about, you know, the network, the CPU, the shares on the CPU, things like that, and the storage, I/O requirements, stuff like that, and basically kind of exploding that virtual machine and putting all that information within that virtual machine, so that no matter where you place that virtual machine, it will always have the same service, or they will always have the same kind of share value network and things like that. And to me, as things become more integrated with space and around the storage side and things like that, that tie into VMware, and all this kind of metadata starts to describe, you know, the structure of your clouds and stuff like that, then that's really interesting how that will develop.
Yeah, I see what you're saying, because, you know, too many times we're stuck with these vague software requirements, gigs, megahertz, and gigabytes of disk, right? Gigs of RAM, frequency.
Yeah.
But, you know, how do you really quantify the needs of an application and then ensure the performance? You know, if you could kind of streamline from, you know, before the product specs to the experience and have that automated, I think you have, you know, really good orchestration platform. You're onto something. Well, hey, guys. Hey, let's wrap it up here real quick. I want to, first of all, thank both of you guys for being on the podcast.
No problem at all. Thanks for having us.
No problem, Rick. Sorry I had to move things around because of the weather up here in Vermont.
Oh, hey, not a problem. It's been crazy here as well. We've had some weather as well. We're not quite as extreme recently. Luckily, we dodged it all. But, yeah, not a problem. So, everybody, if you want to follow Doug on Twitter, he is at Douglas_Carson on Twitter. And Stan is at Sir Stan on Twitter. Stan, Doug, hey, guys, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks very much.
Thanks, Rick. Have a great day.
All right. See you, guys. Cheers.
Cheers.